we're listening to William Herschel's Symphony No. 13 in D major. Herschel was born in Hanover, Germany in 1738. He was a musician by training and settled in England as a young man. But later in life, he fell in love with the cosmos. And one night in March 1781, while sweeping the skies with a telescope, William Herschel made a discovery that doubled the known size of the solar system.
What in fact he had observed was the seventh planet in the solar system, beyond Jupiter and Saturn, and the first new planet to be discovered for over 1,000 years, since Ptolemy. He would name it, patriotically, after the Hanoverian king, Georgium Sidus, George's star. But it eventually became known to European astronomers as Uranus. Urania was the goddess of astronomy, and the new planet was seen to mark a rebirth in her science.
That's Richard Holmes reading from his book, The Age of Wonder. It's a history of the men and women whose discoveries shaped the romantic age of science. Richard Holmes is in our London studio. Welcome to the program.
Hi, it's a great pleasure to be here.
Richard Holmes, your book begins with Captain James Cook's voyage to Tahiti in 1769, and it ends with Charles Darwin's journey to the Galapagos in 1831. Now, in between, you describe this period as the Romantic Age of Science. Can you describe what was happening at the time?
Yeah, I mean, for most people, this period really is the great romantic period in literature, which we associate with Wordsworth and Coleridge and Shelley and Byron. And Keats. These are people that I've written about for most of my career, really, but it gradually came clear to me that the scientific breakthroughs in this period had a major effect on how people saw the world and the universe, and also how people wrote about it.
And there was almost a kind of a do-it-yourself ethic, that anyone with curiosity and some intelligence could really make earth-shattering discoveries at the time.
Yes, I mean, it is, take Herschel the astronomer. I mean, he was trained as a musician, and we heard that wonderful bit of his symphony, and he earned his bread up to the age of 40 as a composer and as a music teacher. But at the same time, he was starting to build what we'd call homemade telescopes, and what he did was something very radical. Normally, telescopes are with two lenses. He built them out of a single mirror. They were metal mirrors. He cast them in his basement kitchen. It still exists down in the city of Bath, this basement kitchen. And the stone floors are still cracked where some of his castings, this red-hot metal, spilled and in great peril to all those around, fell to the floor and split the stone.
And you write that he poured this molten metal into casts of horse dung, pounded horse dung.
That's right. He found a way of casting mirrors. And the great thing was to polish them. They had to be polished to make an exact concave shape so they would reflect and intensify the starlight. And some of these polishings went on, can you believe this, not for 2 or 3 hours. There's one which went on for 16 hours without a break. And here's an interesting part of the biographical story. He was helped by his sister, a very important person in the book, young Caroline Herschel. In this particular instance, in her journal, she describes how during that 16 hours, she put food in his mouth to keep him going and read from the Arabian Nights.
Now, as you say, I mean, William Herschel and his sister Caroline were really a team. It was the two of them who made all of these incredible astronomical discoveries.
Yeah, they go on, they build bigger and bigger telescopes. The biggest one was 40 foot in height, enormous, like a three-story building. And what he discovered was not only a new planet, but he was the first person to define the shape of the Milky Way. And then with this enormous telescope, he saw that there were other galaxies like Andromeda outside the Milky Way. And from that came an entirely new idea of the size of the universe. And also very interesting concepts like what we'd now call deep time. He writes papers saying, when we look through my big telescope, we're not only looking into a distant universe, we're looking into the past, because the light of the stars may take millions and millions of years to arrive at the Earth. So very modern concepts, which had a very powerful impact on 2 or 3 generations of the Romantic writers at that time.
Richard Holmes, another scientist you write about is Humphrey Davy, and you describe him as a sort of father of modern chemistry.
Yeah, as a very young man, he was brought to the city of Bristol, and there he was experimenting with gases on himself they were just beginning to define what things like carbon monoxide, nitrous oxide were. Some of them, of course, are fatal to inhale. He very nearly killed himself inhaling carbon monoxide. But he had a series of successful experiments with nitrous oxide, which we know as laughing gas, which actually it will be eventually a form of anesthetic. But the picture I want to give you here is he, in a very modern way, called on volunteers to experiment with the gases. And one of them was the poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who became a great friend of his. And you need to imagine that all the laboratory papers are there. I've seen them and I use them in the book. This extraordinary moment when the great romantic poet, fresh from his opium experiments, fresh from writing the poem Kubla Khan, goes into the laboratory at Bristol and breathes his experimental gases and then gives his description of what a physical and psychological effect they have on him.
Richard Holmes, you write about how Coleridge and many other Romantic Age poets in Britain sort of saw an affinity between poetry and science.
That's right. I mean, it's very, very striking. We started off with Coleridge and his great friendship with Humphrey Davy, but also people like Shelley, for example, followed Herschel's astronomy very, very closely, and in his poems he often added notes which referred to Herschel's discoveries. For Shelley, Herschel's discovery proved that the universe was too big to have been created by God. Now, very interesting argument here. Shelley was a very fierce atheist, and he used Herschel's science to argue that there was no creator, there was no biblical creation.
Richard Holmes, the subtitle of your book is How the Romantic Generation Discovered the Beauty and Terror of Science. We've talked about the beauty. What do you mean by the terror of science?
I think one of the themes going through the book, that with every invention, every discovery, there is hope, the hope of benefiting mankind, but often there are threats or menaces. The whole story of Frankenstein is almost a myth of that threat. But we see that even in quite innocent ways, where the new astronomy produced by William Herschel actually frightened people. This big idea of the universe, which did not compare with the old, in a way, an intimate and affectionate biblical account. It made the universe seem much more frightening, much more empty, maybe much more hostile. And again, you see this in the scientific breakthroughs. They both promise new knowledge and benefits, but they also raise certain fears and anxieties. And I think that's something we've completely inherited.
Richard Holmes's book is called The Age of Wonder, How the Romantic Generation Discovered the Beauty and Terror of Science. He joined me from London. Richard Holmes, thanks.
Thank you very much.